On today's episode, we read one-star reviews of public art.
We mourn the loss of a beloved St. Louis institution.
And we talk about doing bus stuff.
And I'm here too.
No! Jeez. I'm Colin.
I'm David.
And I'm Bradley.
And I'm St. Louis-based international vertical video sensation and artist, Doug Weaver.
And this is Overarching.
Colin, we have a guest.
We have a guest! It's Doug!
Yeah, hey, Doug. I'm Doug.
Tell us who are you?
Why Doug? The hell are you here, Doug? No.
I'm here because I love St. Louis. I'm an artist in St. Louis. And I guess that's it.
That's it. Why
I'm
cool. Here. There's not much else.
You don't, I'm a you cool don't guy and much. I like to hang out.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Let's do the pledge.
Okay.
I pledge allegiance to Gregory FX Daily, the one to whom we owe it all, and to our taxes, which we prefer to be invested in the arts. That's it. All of it. We want all our tax money to go into the arts so we can just have one big bohemian colorful society where anarchy rules the day. That's exactly what all artists want, right? To never work another day in their lives and just make art at 3 a.m. 1% to the god of yellow envelopes ignored by all.
Yeah, how was your first pledge, Doug?
Well, it was different.
Yeah. Do you feel allegiant?
I'm kind of opposed to pledging allegiance to things in general.
Yeah, it's fair.
But
it's
fair. I like this a little better.
Yeah.
Doug.
Yeah.
You live in St. Louis?
I live in St. Louis.
Well, what part of St. Louis do you live in?
I live in Old North.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Have you always lived in Old North?
No. I've lived in Old North since 2015. Before that, my wife and I lived in Rwanda in the Peace Corps, where I taught art, music, and drama, and my wife taught English. And then before that, we were in grad school in St. Louis, and then we did undergrad in Columbia, Missouri, and then I grew up in Oregon and moved here when I was 18.
I knew he was famous. I didn't know he was cool.
Good one.
I'm like, oh, I moved here from Florida. I moved here from Florida. And then there's this guy who moved here. Like, we about moved here
via
the
way
time.
Of Rwanda.
Yeah, right. Friggin'. That's amazing. Like,
what a culture shock.
Unpack that a little bit.
Oh, it was super weird coming here.
Yeah.
Like coming to our house that has 3 toilets. Yeah. And like for 2 years we had none toilets.
Yeah.
Like we had a hole that we went in and it just went in a pipe that went out into the yard.
Is that how they list properties down there for sale? None toilets in this
well,
house.
Well, often there's a latrine. So the pit latrine, it just goes like 30 feet down.
Yeah.
But then ours was plumbed, but like the pipe broke, so it just went into our yard.
Man.
But our vegetables were huge.
Comment section readers theater is a segment that we do perennially.
Occasionally.
Where I doom scroll Facebook comment sections.
Oh my gosh. This is a script?
And plumb a script out of...
Not just any script. Real comments. Real comments.
These are
from the section of this article.
These are all real comments from a specific publication that we will name in a second. I have changed the order of them, but I have not changed the text of them. Let's know a little more about our fine commenters in St. Louis. Honestly, this is therapy for me.
I think it's therapy for everyone in St. Louis who has ever read a comic.
Sure. There are more doom scrollers than I, but yes. I definitely am very, very, very much addicted to the doom scrolling, especially when it comes to any old thing about progress in St. Louis.
Yeah.
And you better believe that the vast majority of those articles, especially on Facebook, are littered with the most crazy bullshit. And honestly, this was not one that caught my eye to begin with, and I just happened to click on it because it had a lot of comments. It had about 435, which is less comments than I typically go for. Usually I look for the thousands, but I just happened to click on this one, and I was like, oh my God. Comment section Readers Theater with Doug.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's set the scene. Interior, St. Louis Business Journal Facebook comment section.
Headline, Chesterfield Mall owner sets date it will close permanently.
So sad to see it end.
End of an era.
Thank you. Oh, dear Father God.
Heartbreaking. I loved that mall. Many happy memories.
The Chesterfield History Museum would love to talk with you about your memories.
What is relacing it?
Does this hurt the fish?
What does this mean for the Cheesecake Factory?
This is a joke. Downtown Chesterfield, an urban feel? we still have city neighborhoods with the urban feel. And all the people from Chesterfield were afraid to come to downtown St. Louis and are still afraid to come to the urban feel neighborhoods.
Silver lining. At least the building will be reutilized and not abandoned.
It says they are demolishing and building apartments and such.
My husband and I met there at Famous Bar in 1985.
The Chesterfield History Museum would love to talk with you about your memories.
Is the Cheesecake Factory going to be in the new space?
Chesterfield sure is going downhill with all these apartments they're letting in. They don't need any
more. Ah, just what the world needs. More apartments. Adorable townhouses, at the least.
It won't matter. Still, we'll have crime issues, albeit with homeless encampments out front of the businesses as well.
Millennials, Gen Xers, and Gen Zers don't want homes. They want condos. It's a fact! Do your research.
Bro, I'm a research scientist. What you mean is read up on the facts. Doing research is something completely different.
No, research isn't research. Research is research. And mincing words is so immature and juvenile.
I was told when last ate there that the Cheesecake Factory will still be a standalone facility right where they're at.
Calling studying up on stuff research has given rise to people thinking their opinion is at the same level as experts in their field.
I do not believe in opinions because they are literally what people think. And the only person slash being that I care what they think is God.
I used to be a mall rat in the late 70s. Soon, there will be no malls. Sad.
The Chesterfield History Museum would love to talk with you about your memories.
Say goodbye to the big white bird where we met so many times.
The big white bird is at West County Center.
The Chesterfield History Museum would love to talk with you about your memories.
Do obsolete building druids only worship derelict buildings? Or can we look forward to their efforts to preserve relics of obsolete roads and bridges? Progress must be a druid heresy.
The Chesterfield History Museum would love to talk with you about your memories.
When the fashion trends are men dressing like lumberjacks and women like hookers, it gets a bit confusing for the professional retail buyers to go to market. The lumberjack-hooker combo isn't working at retail.
Too bad we can't have any place nice to shop anymore.
The Chesterfield Mall was the best. Now they force us to go to the Galleria to shop.
The Galleria is too far, and too much craziness happens at the Galleria.
Last time I was in Galleria, two people are fighting outside punching each other. It was scary. Since then, I never go back.
The Cheesecake Factory there isn't as good as the one in Chesterfield.
So sad to say bye-bye to Cheesecake Factory.
Kind of miss the Cheesecake Factory.
Yet another once great place with many memories of deceased family members that will be demolished. There's fewer and fewer places to visit and reminisce by the day.
The Chesterfield History Museum would love to talk with you about your memories.
Like, are they reading these comments? What goes through their head when they do?
Scene. Excellent work, Dex.
There you go.
Excellent work. Honestly, one of the finer organized Reader's Theaters that you've done.
I mean, makes me want some cheesecake.
But the one in Chesterfield.
I definitely think Lumberjack Hooker needs to become part of my wardrobe. I need to focus on that a little bit more. That's a good energy.
Yeah, great band name.
Yes.
Goes along with Skynet Jesus. Speaking of Skynet Jesus.
Yeah.
It's at the time of recording.
Pew, 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 pow, pew, pow, pow.
At the time of recording, actually, not at the time of recording. This is an update at the time of recording for stuff that wasn't at the time.
Yes.
Drones. There was
again
Christian drones flying over Gravois Park. Did you hear about this?
I heard about it.
Yeah.
I saw a TikTok from y'all.
Yeah.
the premium news source for all TikTokers that are more famous than us. company, SMS Novel.
Yes.
Was flying those drones. They got
Jomo.
Jomo Johnson,
our good friend.
Jomo. Yeah. Go watch that other episode. Go watch our TikTok on the matter if you want it digestible. Yeah. It's a crazy, crazy story from a crazy, crazy company. And a lot of the comments were, man, it's so embarrassing to be from St. Louis. Why isn't the city doing anything about it? They are, and they were, and it's done.
Yep. We have an update.
Aldermen on Thursday approved a suite of changes to a plan aimed at reining in commercial spy drones that have raised alarm in recent weeks. That's a...
What a great lead.
Little understatement. raised concern, press among for the freedom, First Amendment experts, et cetera, et cetera. Alicia Sonier...
Like the day that news was coming out, we were recording. Like she was like on TikTok like right away, being like, not in my backyard.
Yep,
not my house.
She's definitely been the one. It's her district, but she was the one to really push this. So. And I'm pretty sure it was unanimous. Call claps. We can look it up. That's not in this article, but Sonier said that it would also be nice if it deterred the out-of-state firm SMS Novel from continuing its purported efforts to surveil city neighborhoods despite opposition from city officials. So this is a Board of Aldermen resolution. It passed. We all know the Board of Aldermen, when they want something done, it usually gets done, for better or worse. And it looks like we have the bare minimum of maybe not commercial drone companies surveilling us.
But I love how this took precedent and how fast they were able to like bring this to the table.
It was super public, right?
Yeah, it was a wild news story, and I feel like you get something buzzy, you know, that like
literally buzzy.
Yeah,
the buzz goes.
It's also an easy win because no one likes it.
Yeah.
And there's no profit for the city in allowing it.
Right.
So.
Right.
Well, yet they have, like, to be fair, this is a completely separate issue, but they should take a stance, or they should have issue with it, the Board of Aldermen. The largest story in St. Louis is still Bar PM.
Right.
And yet the aldermen are like, We're not doing anything about that.
Yeah.
Like,
national news story. Like, like you said, it's kind of like this drone story is so.
And the cops keep crashing into shit.
For real.
They keep crashing into so many things.
At the time of recording, since the Bar PM wreck, I believe it's been four SUVs.
Yes, four
have been turned over or wrecked. Three. I think it's four.
So four total.
I think it's five total.
What?
Yeah. It's four. Too many.
Yeah.
It's been
either way, one too many. Yeah.
One of those four wrecks of cop SUVs. Yeah. This is St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department, the city police that we're talking about. They crashed into a historic church sign on the north side. Mm-hmm. Did you hear about this?
Hmm.
I forgot what church it is. I can look. We're winging this particular at the time of recording, but.
The Bethlehem one.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. But then there was another one. There was two churches that they crashed into, which is super.
If we're going to do this, let's do this for real.
So they have to pick a side. Are you going to crash into gay stuff? Or are you going to crash into religious stuff? Pick
that's
one.
That's the issue, David.
You know? No, that's the issue. Which side do you hate?
I had a police cruiser take the mirror off of my car a while back. It was a police chase, went by our house. And so we got it on camera.
Yeah.
So we reached out to the police and we're like, what do we do to get the mirror put back on? Police cruiser hit it. And they're like,
our
problem.
They're like, here's not a ticket fault for not having a mirror.
They're like, it's really the person we were chasing. It's really their fault. I'm like,
what if you pull me over later and I can't see you behind me?
Well,
then you're getting a ticket.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that is the wild thing. Is like, if you have, you know, like, would the insurance company, like, you could, like, if you have like the video, like, would the insurance company go after the police department? Probably not, but like, it'd be pretty cool if they did.
From the Riverfront Times, our good friend, I'm not sure if she's friend of the show, but friend of ours, Sarah Fensky, I wanted to get her words out there because it is amazing. In the article that about the Bethlehem church crash where they took out a historic sign and drove through a fence. So what triggered the accident this time? A stray dog, a parked car just sticking its butt out there in the street, maybe even the police radio daring to distract the driver with all its shiny buttons. Yes, but we can't help but think of the two rookie officers who drove their SUV into Bar PM only for the police to arrest the bar's co-owner who dared to question why a vehicle had crashed through his front wall. Nobody was injured in this particular crash at New Bethlehem except the sign and the fence and the SUV. A friend of mine at Greenfinch the other night, uh-huh, we were talking about it, and he said, maybe it's like a quota thing, and they're trying to get new SUVs. And honestly, that made the most sense.
That's genuinely true.
That definitely sounds like something that the police department would do.
Yeah, we can't replace the fleet until you have so many that are out of commission.
What if the chief, like, from Delaware comes in and is like, guys, I have this foolproof plan that worked for me back out east, all right? We just accidentally crashed our cruisers. Said, we need new ones.
And then he drastically underestimated or didn't give clear instructions as to what to crash it into. Yeah. It's like, what about a gay bar?
What was that?
What
was
about
that?
A historically black church? Shit, God, this
reminds
guys.
Me. Yeah, this reminds me of when I was a kid and my parents, they had like reached their deductible on their home insurance or something. And they're like, we need new windows and we don't have to pay for anything else that breaks. Play baseball in the front yard. Like, just play with hard objects, throw them around
literally
near the windows.
Literally playing hardball.
And I feel like this could be the same kind of thing, that they're like, we, right now, we just need to replace all of these.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that if some of them were decommissioned, we wouldn't be upset with you. Yeah. You would not be punished.
Oh, my was gosh.
This,
oh
yeah,
my gosh.
That's amazing. Was this one, was this church sign the one where, like, the church just thought it was vandalism, but then the neighbors had footage of the police, like,
that's a different one.
It was like the police, like, were like clearing up like rubble, like a piece of, like, the like bumper fell off, and they like,
yeah,
basically removed evidence.
Different one.
Of
they
the
did.
Crime.
The police specifically went out there, tried to make it look like they never crashed.
Yeah,
and like,
drove away.
The oh, you know what?
Had footage on it.
Actually, that's the one with the sign.
Yes,
there's two different
the
historically
sign.
Black churches that they yes. crashed into. One was just the fence, and one was they destroyed a sign.
Yeah,
that's that one. Yes. This one is just yeah.
Yeah,
wow.
The Bethlehem's not the sign.
Correct.
Bethlehem's just the fence.
Yeah, that's actually in the picture now that I'm looking at it. It is just the fence, and the sign is like literally there in the background.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that I thought that was the same. Wow, that's crazy. Like I read that article so the other day. And I thought it was another article about this crash.
No, it just happened so much. It just
by the way,
happens.
This one was on February 8th.
Oh my
God. And that one was more recent.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Oh dear God.
It's February 18th at the time of recording.
It's my mom's birthday.
Happy birthday, Miss Lemon. Mrs.?
Yes.
She's married.
Yeah.
You don't come from a broken home.
To John Lennon. Lemon.
Lemon's a better
but
name.
An M looks like two N's sometimes. So it people, sure would, does, people would be like, oh my God. And they're like so excited for my dad to come. And then she's like, it's my dad.
Petition to call M double N.
No.
Nope.
We call two V's W.
Yeah, exactly.
Throw it in the trash. Bad idea. So, Citizens of Modern Transit came out with a report that reveals an overall economic impact of transit in Missouri. Good one, Colin.
Sorry.
No. I'm leaving this in. Did we get that? Very good.
Oh, I'm sure you did.
Awesome. So, $4.05 billion annually of public transit in the state of Missouri. There's an economic impact of $4.05 billion. Metro transit service, so Metro, including the Metrolink, bus system, all that around the St. Louis area, contributes $2.5 billion. Of that annual economic impact of the $4.05 billion.
Hold which on, means but, we're better than Kansas City.
By a lot.
We're gonna go back.
By well
go,
over a
go
billion.
Back, go back.
Yes.
The bus and Metrolink and bus, the public transit system in the St. Louis metro area contributed
$2.5 billion.
And that is of how much economic impact in the state?
4.05.
And that's for public transit.
Yes.
So the other part of that is Kansas City, et cetera.
Springfield,
et cetera. Sure.
Columbia.
Yeah. Cool. So Metrolink contributing roughly half.
Yes.
Cool.
Oh, well over half.
Oh, amazing. Cool. Over half. I don't know what numbers are.
No. So there's plenty of room for the metro system to grow too, which is insane. All right.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we're adding.
So do
we're
you
adding
know,
a stop.
Yes, we're adding many stops.
Well, we're adding at least one right now under construction.
This
to,
is true.
To in the Shiloh. To the Mid-America Airport.
Yes. Well, actually, that's technically Muskuta.
The Mid-America Airport.
In Muskuta, yes. So do you know how much economic impact Missouri Department of Transportation has annually? Doug, take a stab. How much impact?
I have no idea.
It actually costs
$2 billion. Yeah, probably about the same.
$2.1 billion it costs for just the St. Louis region. So let me say that again. The cost of maintaining roads in the St. Louis region is $2.1 billion annually, according to MoDOT. So you're telling me that in the limited capacity of the metro system that exists in very few parts of the St. Louis region already has a greater economic impact on the region annually than it costs to maintain the St. Louis region's roads. Okay? On average, you are sitting, and this is just an argument for you people that are extremely car-centric, and I understand it because
you are one.
I am also that person that's extremely car-centric, but I don't want to be. I don't want to live in a region that is extremely car-centric. On average, you're sitting in congested traffic. This was all reports done this past year. On average, you're sitting in congested traffic for 47 hours annually. Just like bumper to bumper traffic. Two full days of your life. wasted driving a car. Oh, and that congestion alone cost you over $900 annually in wasted gas just sitting there. Okay? That's just the fuel wasted, wasted from the congestion in the traffic. Which, fun fact, could buy you an annual Metro pass.
The thing that always gets me...
Which is wild!
The thing that's always like the radicalization part for me when it comes to not owning a car is like, if you walked up to anybody and was like, do you want a $10,000 a year raise? What would be the answer?
Yes.
Don't have a car.
Right. That's a way.
Yeah.
Like you change jobs, you change whole sides of the city. You change regions sometimes for a $10,000 a year pay raise.
Also, your stress levels go way down. Your emotional intelligence.
I was telling David a story.
I interjected.
If sometimes you change regions for a $10,000 a year pay raise. You sell your car, you immediately have $10,000 extra dollars for the most, on average.
Yeah.
So, but that's not, I mean, again, that's not possible for everybody in the St. Louis region. I was gonna abut your statement with, this is r/mapporn. I know the paragon of reliable information, Reddit, but I'm looking at a map of metro areas in the U.S. where more than 5% of the population goes to work on public transit. St. Louis is not on it. That's not surprising.
No.
Like, and so what you're saying is, just to kind of put it in a bow, the metro transit system in St. Louis contributes over half of the economic impact of the state, and car transportation infrastructure is a $2 billion cost sink.
To sink.
And that is even without less than 5% of people actually utilize the public transit system because of valid reasons, because it like doesn't go everywhere.
Yes.
And if it did, imagine the possibilities.
Yes. Yeah.
I think we need more incentives for people to get the annual bus pass, because I think if people already had the pass, they would use it a lot more. And I have an idea for this.
Go.
So what they need to do
is exciting.
They need to have like metro day trips where you could have your bus pass, and it would be like, this bus is going to take you for a day trip to go wine tasting.
Mm.
But they would also partner with the wineries. They're going to be bringing a lot of people there, that if someone has an annual bus pass or has a bus pass, they get certain discounts and incentives at the wineries. So the Metro Link, whatever, would be partnering with all of these other businesses, like a day trip to the Merrimack Caverns or taking day trips different places. Yeah. And they could have like a big ad campaign with like billboards that say, do bus stuff. Just
do
like bus more stuff. Bus stuff.
Do bus stuff.
That's we love bus stuff.
Bus stuff.
Yeah. I'm
voting for you for office just for the slogans alone.
That's a great slogan.
That's an extremely good slogan.
There are a lot of places that are already on the lines that would back that up too. Like, I mean, you can take the bus.
Back that bus up.
There you go. You can take, there's infinite possibilities with that.
They're really good.
Even like a metro bar crawl. Like the bus is going to take you and then it'll take you home.
Yes. That's what we thought.
For Greenfinch?
No. What was the NPR? MetroQuest.
Oh,
We, Bradley and I, along with my now spouse and our friend, other person that I won't mention, not for bad reasons, just because I don't want to say their name everywhere. We won MetroQuest 1 year.
Yeah.
And we thought it was
2018.
2018, simpler times. We kind of thought it was going to be like having to do with the metro, and it was
a fundraiser for CMT. It was a fundraiser for Citizens for Modern Transit. It was the first time we ever did it. We said, this sounds like fun, and we won. We swept the floor.
I think we got it
very
like,
obvious.
The first perfect score. The first perfect score ever.
Yeah.
But like, to his point, it was like it was a scavenger hunt all around the Grove, and like getting people to buy in by just taking the thing. Because it's like, I know, like my father-in-law says this about like his weird friends, that it's like, oh, you know, some of my friends, they don't like coming into the city at night. That's a crazy thing to say to
people
me.
Live there.
People, there are humans who live there, and you know where else humans are on? The trains and buses.
Yeah.
And it is so wildly normal. When I tell people that I don't have a car, the first question is like, or really reaction is like, oh, a lot of times, like from the pearl clutchers. And it's like, oh, you like that? How do you live like that? And I breathe
fresh air outside.
It's boring. It's just boring.
Yeah.
That's all it is. Yeah. I get on the bus. I sit down on the bus.
I don't get road rage.
I get off the bus. I can listen to my podcasts.
Yeah.
I can do a little work. I can sit on the train.
I can doom scroll.
I can doom scroll. I can make these Facebook comment section readers theaters, which I have done before. And it's just boring.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Transportation should be boring.
It should. Make transportation boring
again. Yeah. Except for like the cars, like the train cars themselves.
Those are always sexy.
Make those sexy.
Yeah. I mean, let's face it. There's only good train cars and better train cars in my mind.
Mm-hmm. So to wrap this section up, I want to add some clarity to this. Yeah. I agree with the sentiment overall. It could be a misleading comparison to say that there's $2.5 billion of economic impact that the St. Louis metro system provides to the state, and that's, you know, a greater impact versus the cost it takes to maintain the roads. When we're talking about economic impact, we're talking about economic activity. We're talking about, like, the ability for the, you know, for lack of a better word, GDP of the local area to
produce. They're not supposed to know that.
Let him finish.
So, but to say a good thing, this article does mention that, because if you want to, like, truly compare numbers to numbers, you want to compare tax revenue to tax expenditure. Now, these numbers are vastly different, but it's still a significant number in the grand scheme of things, and a number that we can increase.
And the idea is that it's an outsized economic impact via the metro transit system, despite the fact that it doesn't really have low ridership for what it is. It's just like, despite the fact that the region's population doesn't take it as much as, say, Chicago or New York or DC.
Yeah.
Like, and it's still an outsized economic impact.
And so, but here's the thing is the people who do the math did the calculation and said the state government collects an estimated average of $51 million in annual taxes, that's revenue, because of the direct and multiplier effects of transit. So basically they're saying, we did all these numbers on the economic impact of transit. Specifically within that, what transit does across the state, there's basically $51 million more dollars in taxes that are collected by the state due to the things people do because they're able to get places using transit. Mm.
Okay. And that makes a lot of sense when you think about it, because it's like what the system is good at right now is getting people from point A to point B, and where point A is a dense city cluster of residential stuff to point B, a dense city cluster of commercial stuff, both of which are mixed use. Whether it's downtown, whether it's Clayton, whether it's Richmond Heights, whether it's Central West End. It's really easy to take the metro between those places, really easy to get bus access in those places, and all of those are mixed use and livable, walkable, workable areas.
Are they
expensive to live? Also, yes.
Yes.
Which is the point. Like the people who need public transit the most in the city are vastly underserved by it.
I'm going to say one thing more just to kind of clarify how many people are actually riding metro and using metro in the area to show you that people really do ride this. 24.5 million rides a year on metro. Okay. People use the hell out of it, way more than you think. It is super important to the region.
Can speak firsthand. It's not like the buses are empty.
I know so many people that live in St. Louis without a car, and it is because of metro. Just is.
Oh, I'm just thinking about how, like, so many people, the major shift that we're seeing now is people not driving to work because they don't go anywhere to work. People live at home, they work at home, they do everything at home.
Yeah.
That most transportation now is for leisure and maybe groceries, but a lot of groceries are getting delivered now too. And so I feel like that has a major impact, that people are going to want walkable communities more than they're wanting to drive anywhere anyway. Yeah, yeah. I feel like the driving in general is kind of going to get less popular as time goes on. Mm-hmm. But the areas that are still going to be relying heavily on transportation and public transportation are places that you can't buy food in the neighborhood. Because when I think about like Soulard, you can just walk to the farmer's market on Saturday, get all everything you need for the week. And then
Vincent's Market.
Yeah.
Like
it's, iconic.
There's, or
you have options.
Yeah.
Versus where I live, that is a food desert. There is nowhere to walk to get food.
Yeah. So you probably even take a bus.
You have to take a bus, and less than half of the neighborhood has their own transportation. So you have to take a bus to get your groceries, and getting groceries on a bus isn't very fun or convenient. So I think what we need to focus on is shifting towards just having more access to food.
Yeah, dude. Preach.
Brings us to our next segment. Is a brand new segment.
Fart time.
Art fart.
I was gonna call the segment, hey, my name is Bradley and I really like art a lot and I like to think about it and how it impacts like society and culture. And Doug's here and he's an artist, so I think it'd be a good conversation.
How about public fart?
That's better.
Okay. Well, I was thinking specifically recently just about like public art in general, and like I feel like most of the time we think about public art, we think about sculpture. And just as a person in the world, in recent years, I've come to appreciate sculpture more, or like think about like the first time someone was like, oh, the cool thing about sculpture is that like you have to encounter it from different perspectives, different angles. It's like, that's so intuitive. But when you articulate it, it's like, oh, like it's like art appreciation 101. It's like, oh, I can like think about this a little more.
Why should St. Louisans care about what you guys are about to talk about?
Well, and so here's kind of my question.
Because I know that
my,
like,
oh yeah, no, like I can get into the esoteric and just live there and
but
have
but,
fun.
But Bradley, I thought modern art was for pretentious assholes.
Yeah.
From Reddit.
well, so I want to ask a question, and I've got some answers for it, but I'd be curious to hear if Doug's got some thoughts, and you guys too.
Reddit does. I can read some of those if you'd like.
Let's hear Doug's first, and then you can hit us with the Reddit. But like public art. What's it good for? What's the point?
What's it good for?
Yeah, like just broadly, like
so broad.
I know.
That's a very, very open-ended question.
Can we, first of all, can we superpose some of Doug's work like before just to get an idea of what he's done? Like you've probably seen it before. It's really good.
No. Take that down.
No, why not?
Go to his TikTok. Go to his TikTok.
Oh, that's true. We could like do that.
I don't put much art on there.
That's a good point. He does not.
Go to his website. You have a website?
I do have a website.
What's your website?
DougWeaverArt.org.
Put it down.
Org!
I need to update it.
What a guy.
It's cheaper than .com.
Yeah.
It is.
It's a smart move. Also, org is way cooler.
Yeah.
We have to get our .org running pretty soon.
Yeah, there was a .com boom. We're about to have a .org boom.
So what is public art good for?
Yeah, because like I feel like, and this is like, let me set up the straw man for a moment, because I feel like there is, you know, a general sense like a lot of public art, particularly public sculpture, tends to be abstracted. And I feel like there's a broad swath of, you know, the public who might say like, well, that's just taking up space, or you know, why do we need it? Why do we need to spend money on it? Why do we need to spend civic resources on it? Wouldn't that be better spent in some other way?
And there's a reason that it tends to be abstracted.
Yeah,
And that has to. So much of it has to do with funding. You asked several questions there.
Yeah.
So coming back to why is public art important? Why is sculpture important? And some of it has to do with placemaking and having a place have something that draws you to it, something that you notice when you're there. So I'm currently on a committee for choosing a sculpture for the Near North Side. They just put out a call for entries for it, and it's rather spendy. It's part of the Choice Neighborhoods grant system. So it's like $200,000, something like that.
Yeah.
And so part of the push for that is to have, when people are driving through there, there is that thing that you recognize. There's that thing that you see and associate with that place.
Hey, look, there's the arch.
Hey, look, there's the arch. People don't know anything about St. Louis, but you say, oh, the St. Louis Arch. I can see the arch from my window. People are like, oh, I know where you live.
Yeah.
So you have that. What are some other sculptures in St. Louis that you like recognize with a specific neighborhood with that sculpture?
at the 4455 interchange.
Yeah.
Sculpture in my neighborhood called Treemonisha. That is an allusion to the Scott Joplin opera, which was just performed here recently. But this sculpture is like ridiculed by the masses, but it is something that is so like endemic to our neighborhood. It's iconic.
Yeah.
You can't go anywhere without seeing it. I can like, you're crossing the giant interchange to go to Walgreens on foot like I do, and it takes 15 minutes longer. And all the time I'm looking at Treemonisha, the sculpture, which, by the way, indicative of a different problem, I would love to hear your reaction to this, has one Google review.
Are we going to do a Google review? From 3 months ago.
Yeah, we can. Ready? It's one Google review, one star, ugly. From Nathan,
yeah.
A local guide.
What's uglier, the statue or the legacy of the neighborhoods destroyed by that interchange?
Yeah. For real, which I bet
that's a good point.
Is like the reason it's there.
Which coming back to the way my neighborhood is, what it generally is recognized for is abandoned, rundown buildings that Paul McKee owns.
Yeah.
Is hey, most yeah. of the neighborhood.
That's a, hold on, that's a curse word in our house.
And so, yeah. And so having something that is intentionally for beautification, something that is noticeable, that it does help in some ways. It helps for people who live there to feel a little bit cared about, mm-hmm. but then also people live there that are like, why are we spending $200,000 on this ugly sculpture? And why is it ugly? Yeah. So why do they tend to be these abstracted, super contemporary, sometimes ugly sculptures? And that has to do with funding and time frames. So how long does it take to make a really, really well thought out, nice sculpture?
That's an extremely good question. I'm on the edge of my seat. This is so exciting.
I have a friend here in St. Louis. His name's Scott, and he made this amazing sculpture. It's like a 20-foot tall figure of a man, and it's like super industrial, and it's like he built the skeletal system first, and then built and like he made it out of clay.
Okay,
putting the musculature. It's oil clay, so it doesn't dry out. Put the muscles on, and then put the skin over the top of that. Like super anatomically correct, massive, really amazing sculpture. One of the most amazing sculptures I've ever seen that I know who made it. And it was made to be cast in bronze, but it was never cast in bronze because casting in bronze is expensive, and you have to have someone that is willing to buy this sculpture and pay for the casting in bronze. And the process of doing that, from when you start the casting process to when it's finished, it might take a few years to get done.
Really?
There's just a lot that goes into it. It's hard to know exactly what that time frame is going to be because they have to cast it in sections, put all the sections together, weld them together, and then like fix those welded joints to make this amazing sculpture. So a lot of these public funding for arts, they're like, okay, we have this call for entry out, and the sculpture has to be done in 3 months because it is under this grant that we got, and all of the funds have to be distributed in 3 months. Yeah. And we can't distribute funds for an unfinished sculpture because then we don't know that it's going to be finished. We're not going to spend $200,000 and get no sculpture.
Yeah.
So we have to have a finished sculpture in 3 months.
Yeah.
So you're saying, like most things in the city, it's, I have this great idea. The city says, great, tell me about it. And you tell them about it. And they're like, how much is that going to cost? And you say, this much. And they're like, yeah, here's $5. And they say, how long is it going to take? And I'm like, here's how long. And they're like, how's about 3 months? And now we have two lines on the Metrolink. Like,
yeah, exactly.
And now we have, you know, like whatever, insert city pitfall here that is more complicated than one could possibly imagine.
The one area that I kind of applaud their efforts, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, but Chesterfield has The Awakening. Have you seen the piece? Hmm. It's the dude coming out of the ground with the arm. It's huge.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I know that.
It's massive. Mm-hmm. And I know the bigger the piece, the more expensive usually. I don't know exactly what it's made out of, but it had to have some casting of some sort. So it had to take a very, very long time. But it's people from the region go to there. Like specifically to see it. It is kind of an iconic piece, right? And so I associated that, like growing up, because you know, in St. Charles, crossing the Missouri River to the St. Louis County was a big deal. yep, correct. So like going out to that like sculpture and seeing that was like always really cool. I really loved that.
What's an easy thing we can do today to help adjust our perspective about viewing public art in public spaces?
I think sometimes it's worth taking the time to try to really digest public art and to digest what the meaning behind it is. Sometimes the process of putting that artwork in is more thoughtful, that the artwork should represent something about the region that it's in, something about the neighborhood that it's in. It should hopefully have some input from people who live nearby. And sometimes it's not worth it, because sometimes sculpture is there just because it's easy. So an example is in Columbia, Missouri, they have a law that a certain percentage of all of your funding when you build a new commercial building has to go to art. I don't remember what the percentage is. It's like 1% of all of your construction costs has to go to public art.
Whoa.
And
what an interesting law.
Yeah, it's interesting. So someone was, I don't remember who it was, they were building this massive building project. And because it was so massive, they had a bunch of money to put towards public art. The problem is, it's a lot of work to hire a lot of different artists to make art. Like, ideally, if you're like, I have $500,000 to spend on art, well, I mean, you could find, I don't know, what's 500,000 divided by 50?
10,000.
10,000? You could definitely find 50 artists that would make a different sculpture for $10,000. You can make 50 sculptures in Columbia, Missouri for that, which would be amazing.
Yeah.
But that's a lot of work. You have to put out a call of entry. You have to have people to sort through all the entries and decide which ones you're going to go with, and to make sure that they're all safe and digestible, to make sure that people aren't going to be mad about it. What's easier is to buy one thing for $500,000 from one artist.
Well, and whether, even if that piece outside of this situation would not be market valued at $500,000, it's worth $500,000 because we have to spend $500,000.
What's worth in art?
That's where things get really weird. They need to find an artist who makes sculptures in the ballpark range of $500,000.
Wow.
There are no artists who do that in Columbia, Missouri.
Yeah.
Because no one pays that much for art in Columbia, Missouri.
I have never even thought about that.
So they end up hiring someone from New York or from California, where that's what the market rate for sculpture is there.
Okay.
That has things on their resume that cost in that ballpark. And what they ended up buying was this big ugly keyhole. If you've ever
That's
where it was, with like these blurry images that were blown up too big. It's terrible. But that artist has a history of making artwork
that's expensive.
Wait a second. Was this actually $500,000?
I don't know. I don't remember how much it was.
I was going to be like, whoa.
But I just made
but
up
the
that.
Point, but the point stands.
The
yeah.
point
yeah.
is,
yeah.
it was more than it should be.
That's amazing.
So what you're saying is, like, to distill it down, like, if I'm looking at Treemonisha, and I'm Nathan, and I go, ugly, the first thing I should have thought about was, there's a whole lot of work and policy maneuvering that goes into it. That's number one. Like, it's a whole process that led to this getting there. Mm-hmm. That was both a creative but also a bureaucratic craziness that happened. And also that sometimes it is wallpaper, but would you prefer a world without it? Would you prefer a world without wallpaper is what I'm thinking, at least.
We had specifically talked about one piece in St. Louis that has, you know, kind of a history of being derided, and we're kind of
my dad loves to talk about this piece, as do many St. Charles County dads when they come down to downtown.
It's interesting because, and I'll just lay it out there, and
I think I know you're in.
Talk on it a little bit, but the sculpture's called Twain. It's by Richard Serra. It's in Serra Sculpture Park down in that, you know, the main the mall, you know, of
City
all
Guard.
Those. Oh, well, it's not in City Garden.
Next to, adjacent to City Garden.
But it's its own
sculpture. Oh, it's the big triangle.
It's the big triangle. And it's funny that you say, like, that your dad's like, every time he drives by it.
That's a compliment.
Every time he drives by it, he, like, you know, makes some snide comment about how it's like, oh, what's that? What's the point of that? My personal response to that is, I feel like I miss it so much. I feel like I don't hate it as a sculpture, but the placement of it and, like, the fact that you have all these trees around it from the street is, like, if you're driving past it, it's easy to miss.
Yeah.
It's easy to be like, what? I've never seen that before.
The weirdest thing about the Twain piece is that they also planted like some 30 trees around it, and over a third of them died.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like,
what?
What? It's like, what happened?
Well, I feel like Richard Serra notoriously makes like obnoxious sculptures.
Uh-huh.
Like he would purposefully make sculptures that obstruct your path, mm-hmm. to make your city a little bit less walkable, because you have to walk around his big steel sculpture. No, he wasn't. He knows that it's a little bit obnoxious.
Yes,
and yeah, that's that. But yeah. There, I remember at one point in St. Louis, there was a protest that people hated that sculpture so much that they painted them to look like dominoes. They painted pips on them.
Are you kidding?
Are they called pips?
Yeah.
Yeah, to make them look like giant dominoes. And you can find pictures of it. And it's like, it looks so cool. Yeah. These big giant dominoes. I think that should be done permanently.
Yeah.
Well, but when you get out and you walk around it and you are among it, it actually is kind of... It is enveloping and kind of
reading the Reddit.
Interesting experience.
The Reddit reactions to this sculpture are elucidating. But one of them, which is true, go there. It is an echo chamber.
Yes,
which it is kind of cool to just like shout inside of it. I've done that. I'm one of those weirdos that you've seen downtown. I'm what you're scared of, St. Charles. Let's face it, I'm not. But yeah, no. Some of the Reddit people say a nice idea doesn't work. Ugly. It's an ugly waste of
nice
space.
Nice idea doesn't work. That should be the slogan for.
What do they think the intended purpose of it is?
No clue. No other context. And also, it's on the St. Louis public sex scavenger hunt list, which is crazy that we have that.
I'm sorry, what?
That's not an ideal place.
I mean, there's a whole chain here.
Hold on.
When I worked, you just said
it's not an ideal place. Do you have firsthand experience?
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
It's when I worked at AT&T, my boss had a desk overlooking those walls and said he's seen people fucking behind them on several occasions. I thought that list just consisted of Jack in the Box drive-thrus. I love Reddit.
Oh my god!
From what I just, you know, my cursory little read about that sculpture is you're apparently supposed to view it from above,
mm-hmm.
but like, yes. But how?
From the courts, the courthouse.
Oh, is that what building. is that like what it's supposed to?
Yeah, so
you're supposed
the,
to view it from
the courthouse, the new courthouse building. You can look down on it, and it's kind of juxtaposed against the arch. That they have a similar kind of shape, that they're supposed to have a relationship between the two.
Yeah.
But it does create kind of like an eerie space when you're there. Because I've taken my family there that like we're going to try to enjoy the sculpture.
Yeah.
Like we're going to have a picnic or something. But we felt similar to the trees that we're like, no.
Yeah.
This is kind of an awful space to be in. There's just, it's an eerie and weird space. And it's not comfortable, but it's not supposed to be a comfortable space.
To wrap this segment up, I kind of want to just like hit like is there a public art piece that you think more people should know about, interact with, that you're just like personal fave, just like what's a, do you got a fave, do you have like, or just like an interesting outlier that, you know, if you don't know, you ought to know,
like a person that we need to know about.
Public sculpture that I think people need to visit is Rootwad Park.
Yes,
it's amazing little park on the riverfront. Yep. I really wish that the fountain could get repaired there, but the city's never going to put any investment into it if people aren't visiting there other than to tag it. But I feel like it's become this space that the graffiti on it and the nature of that park is its own vibe.
Yeah,
and so I love that park.
Rootwad Park, famously sculpted by Bob Cassily.
Bob Cassily.
It's time for
that favorite segment of ours.
314-25.
314-25 is.
Did he scare you, Doug?
No.
314-25 is the love child of a tier list and a top 10 or top 5, I guess. And if you don't get it, you'll get it soon.
If you don't get it, you'll get it.
3 is mid. 1 is great. 5 is not. Today we're doing St. Louis skyscraper.
Skyscraper has to be 100 meters or more.
And continuously
feet.
Inhabited.
Yes.
The internet says continuously inhabited buildings over 100 to 150 meters. So if they're not sure, we're not either.
Inhabitable.
Inhabitable.
Correct. Inhabitable. Yes, inhabitable. Not, they don't have to be currently lived in.
Yeah. Don't come at us because we're not going to list the Wainwright building.
We're not going to list the Wainwright building.
It's small in the sense of this case. It used to be the largest skyscraper in the world, if like not the first skyscraper ever.
Number three.
100 above the park.
It's mid.
AKA Taipei 101 knockoff.
That's this guy.
All right. So the reason it's the reason I think we've put it mid is it was a leap of faith. It was like they took a shot, right? They were like, let's, because Studio Gong does, the designer of the building, does a lot of creative work.
What have they done?
A bunch of stuff in Chicago.
Okay.
Bunch of stuff in Chicago.
What are they called?
And it looks like
Studio
it
Gong, G-A-N-G, or is it Gang?
Studio Gang.
It looks way different than anything around it, which is kind of like cool. Yes. I feel like.
Well, they're also going to potentially build a 31-story Albion to the lot to the north of it as well. So there will be another, but that one's going to be completely like ovular as well. So that's going to be like kind of juxtaposed to the jaggedness, which would be super cool. But also, these are places for like super wealthy people. So like they know what they were building.
It's also apparently like kind
of
leaky.
It is leaky and like a glass, like one of the windows fell off. Oh, no, like one of the panels, one of the glass panels fell off.
Well, at least
everybody's it's, like, oh,
at least it's made fine. Like everybody's like, oh, this building looks like a bunch of Chinese takeout boxes stacked on top of each other. It kind of does.
Yeah.
But like it's a, which is actually what Taipei 101 looks like. It's the much more square than this building. But at least if the windows are falling off, they fall like kind of onto the building maybe.
Yes.
They I don't do. Know if that's actually true.
It is true. Yes. But they took a big risk. And we'll reward them for that. And it does, regardless.
The arbiters of good skyscraper. Of
our, me, the one guy who is not the artist in the room.
But you're a real estate agent, so that makes you an architect.
I just like pretty things.
It's my son's favorite building in St. Louis.
Yes!
Because he has an alter ego. He calls himself Finley Robot. And he says that is Finley Robot's spaceship.
Oh, that is the best.
And so
it inspires children. What more do you want?
So he makes drawings of it with him as Finley Robot. This is his spaceship.
Love that.
Later on this list, we can find your son's nemesis, an evil lair.
Yes.
Okay.
We have. I'm very excited for the world to know about this one.
Yeah. Number one. And it's kind of like really not close.
And it really should be your number one. It's the civil courts building, everybody.
Where you can view the Twain from.
Yeah.
That's just the wrong Twain one, isn't it? Is it the civil courts building or the new the Eagleton court building?
I think it's civil courts where you can view.
View the Twain from it.
But it's beautiful. Is stated purpose. It's got the two sphinxes at the top. The
mausoleum of Helicarnassus. Is
that right?
On top?
Yes. That's correct.
Yeah. David, why is it number one to you?
Okay. Because they didn't have to go so hard. They were like,
it is made of rock.
So they're using like local resources, right? Whenever constructing the building. And they, at the top of this building, they were like, how about we just build a Grecian construct on top of the courts building? Like, let's just have a full scale. Grecian building on top of this.
One of the most interesting things about this building that I think is only interesting to me and my friend Morgan, who's going to, we've talked about a lot on this podcast, whether we know it or not, is so if you, once you know this, you'll never be able to unknow it. That so all those buildings that they constructed for the 1904 World's Fair are made out of the same size limestone block. They were replicated. And they built these buildings specifically out of those blocks so they could take them, they could put them up easy and take them down easy. And they didn't get rid of those blocks. A lot of them became foundations. And I'm going to guess that it became this building too, because it's those blocks, all those white limestone blocks.
That makes sense.
The right size. This building was built in 1930, 1928.
I knew it was used by the local resources, but I didn't know it was like.
I bet you it was those recycled blocks.
Okay.
I'm not sure if there's a place to like find comments. Like, please correct me if I'm wrong, because there is a specific size of block that you'll see in so many buildings between 1905 and about 1930 that it was this giant bay of these stones that weren't destroyed that went to build different foundations, different buildings in town. And it looks like this building is that size of block, just kind of on a cursory look.
To that point.
To wit.
Research isn't research. Research is making wild assumptions and letting the comments correct us.
Hey, that's why we're podcasters and not research scientists. I'm a research scientist, bro, to quote that guy from the Facebook comment section. Number four. Centene Plaza.
Friggin'
big blue boxes.
Yes.
Big. Well,
thank you for having the disgust. Yeah, it's correct. It's not number five, though. Right? So
we'll get
but it is
five.
Four, so it's on the lower
it's
tier.
It's fun to paint.
It's,
I'll
sure,
give it that.
You know, I'm sure it is kind of easy to paint.
Nah.
At least from a shape.
It reflects a lot.
Oh, sure. That's fair. I was thinking I can draw a cube.
The shape of it is not that hard. Yeah. I've done a lot of St. Louis cityscapes, and that one's kind of fun. It has a nice, like, the blue and yellow tones that come through in the stripes.
Sure.
Mm. And then the reflections of the other buildings coming through as well.
Yeah.
But then the reflection of the sun is not great.
No, it's not. Because, I live in Brentwood, and we go up towards Clayton a lot. I drive up towards Clayton a lot, and when I'm around there, I can't see. If I look at it, genuinely, like if I look at it, if like from the south side, since, you know, sun's in the south, boom, can't see.
I don't know what the difference is between those windows and the windows that face west on Forest Park, like all the buildings on Forest Park. One of my favorite views of St. Louis is being in the middle of Forest Park at about 5:30 p.m. and seeing all those buildings' windows look like they're on fire. And they're all orange. They're all very, like, it's a different kind of hue. And then you get Centene Center, which is like sun mega death laser.
One of my favorite things about, so Centene Plaza, those two buildings, right? So Clayco was the designer and builder of those two, not designer. And if you go to the Centene Plaza website, I love it so much because it tells you everything you need to know about just this office building of death that you walk into that is just so office building-y, you know? Like, this design build development, it's a 21-story office tower with 1,700 space parking garage.
Ooh, there it is.
And a public plaza with, quote, decorative landscaping, including outdoor seating, a waterfall, and a fire pit.
You know, that's
cool.
Those are all cool.
So what?
Like, you know what downtown Clayton is, though? You know, we talk some. I'm gonna give one.
Yeah,
I'm
it's give just one a bunch of outdoor seating and fire pit.
Sure, but they contained the parking underneath.
It is true.
And you know what downtown Clayton is? Walkable.
It's true.
And you know what has really good access to the MetroLink? Clayton.
We do give it a bunch of crap.
It's we give Huntley more.
Here's the thing: if it was in the city limits of St. Louis, we'd be like, "Ah, Clayton's great."
Yeah, we sure would. We absolutely would.
You know, if it like ended at 170, we'd be like, "Whoa!"
They have some bike lanes that are protected. Yeah. it's a great down. It's the Manhattan of the Midwest, as it says on a tote bag somewhere.
God, the worst. Central West End would be like, nah.
Number two.
Chase Park Plaza.
Chase Park Plaza. Speaking of one of those buildings that is on fire
to the other side of
to the
park.
West. Mm-hmm. One of those buildings. And two
of our buildings are right next to each other. But I enjoy it because it is multifaceted. Right?
It's like an original mixed-use building.
It is truly original mixed-use. And so it's got a few restaurants in it, obviously a hotel.
Yep.
It's got condos in it. It's got
a swimming pool for rich people to look
like
at
a couple swimming pool.
Yeah.
It has a goddamn theater that is one of the best theaters in St. Louis, movie theaters.
If you're under 5'7". Which I am, so it's...
Oh, the seating?
It's pretty cramped.
Yeah.
But, you know, people were shorter back then.
As a 5'10er, I am a little cramped.
5'10, really?
I didn't say with or without shoes.
You got those Ron DeSantis.
I'm 5'9 and 3... I'm 5'9 and 3 quarters. I'm the Harry Potter of 5 feet.
You know,
isn't that just Harry Potter? Harry Potter of 5 feet is just Harry Potter. But yeah, I think it deserves your love and affection as much as the rest of St. Louis believes it. It is accurately rated.
It's a beautiful building. I think it's a beautiful building from the other side of what you just showed.
And it's also surrounded by other great architecture. I think that also builds up a piece, right? Being surrounded by other beautiful things.
That's true. Yeah, and it's different eras of architecture.
Unless it's like surrounding yourself with like uglier people to make yourself look better.
Sometimes that's also true.
Yeah.
I do that all the time. This is overarching.
No. Number five.
Some honorable mentions. Wainwright Building wasn't one of them, but that was just because of height.
Yes.
Because it's 5'9¾", not 6 feet like all skyscrapers need to be.
Oh.
What else?
One Metropolitan.
There. Yeah.
So the Met, the one Metropolitan building.
The one
building,
behind us, right?
Yeah. That,
yeah.
That guy? Yeah, Larry's hanging off of. Second try.
Does he want his real name out there?
Maybe. I don't know. Second try. Go look him up.
Southwestern Bell Building.
Beautiful building.
I like that building.
AT&T was just like, we're going to go to a Gothic building instead of this gigantic monstrosity of a 909 Chestnut.
I used to really like taking students to the public library and sitting on the outside area there and drawing that building.
Yeah. Well, it's got so many lines.
Yeah.
It's got so many layers.
It's very interesting to draw.
The One Financial Plaza, a.k.a. the Lewis Rice Building, which you can see back here in his photo, which we will put up an image
of the office, the at
meeting,
the top.
The meeting space, the meeting room at the top of the building, which is where your son should have an evil lair.
His arch nemesis is Evil Ninja.
Evil Ninja.
This is his lair.
Why has somebody not made a movie at the top of this building? I want a chair that I can do this in.
And tell people to send in the guards.
And stroke. I want a Mr. Evil. Dr. Evil.
Well, Mr. Evil.
He didn't get his degree yet.
Right. We're doing a prequel.
Yeah. Could you imagine Mike Myers' prequel called Mr. Evil?
Mr. Evil. Don't give him ideas. I go see it. I would go see it.
I love it.
Number five.
Number five. The worst skyscraper in St. Louis. It's kind of not. It's just below, but we're going to count it.
Well, we had Clayton in here.
It's high enough.
No. It's just below.
It says 100 to 150 meters. Whatever. Anyways. It's that one random skyscraper on 170.
It's University Tower in Richmond Heights that everybody's like, oh, look, we're getting close to the city on 40. And then it's just that. And you're like, that's why? Like, it's so weird. It's redeeming factor. Coma Coffee is at the bottom of it.
That's the kind of building that I look at and I'm like, that is an abandoned building.
Yeah.
Well, even though it's not.
Slough Care has a lot of offices in there, so like there's primary physicians and all sorts of stuff. Also, weird thing, there is a dude that spent over like millions of dollars creating this massive production space and that massive production studio with like an infinity board, like an infinity wall. What are they called? Infinity LED boards.
The volume.
This dude built out huge boards like that. It's huge.
It's in there?
It's in there currently. This dude spent so much money because he thought he was going to like turn it into something, and then now it's just kind of there.
Cool.
Right. I guess
if we ever need to film something,
it's for a bunch of
like
rich people to just go explore their possibilities.
Like VR. But not with a headset.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, hey, keep it on the list.
Are you looking at it right now?
No, I was just seeing if this building is tall enough.
Ooh, he's going to fact check us.
No, different building.
Oh.
Oh, I see what you... Oh, is this...
I'm not sure it's tall enough.
Another honorable mention?
Tip-top tower?
Lewis and Clark Tower.
That is a great building. It's one of St. Louis's two circular abandoned hotels. Cylindrical abandoned hotels.
I was just thinking, when you're talking about like a random tower that you're just driving and you're just like, what, why is, where did this come from?
That is absolutely true. It's like
is that the one up by, is that the, like, one Normandy? Up by the airport? Or
it's over there somewhere. I don't know what municipality it's in, but yeah, no, it is absolutely random. I think it is a little bit shorter.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure it's tall enough.
It's also just as random, but architecturally more significant.
So,
which is why this one's at number five and that one isn't.
Well, isn't it like, so the circle of death that we talk about all the time, the six-way intersection.
Oh, the Halls Ferry Circle.
Halls Ferry, yeah. Tesson, yeah, all that. No, it's
not
Halls
Tesson.
Ferry. I'm
sorry. Halls Ferry, North Broadway.
Riverview.
Yeah, all that stuff.
All that. It's just north of that on 367.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
So not only is it abandoned in the middle of nowhere,
I drive by it when I go up to Eagle Springs and Florissant golf courses. That says a lot about me.
You drive to the north side just to go golf?
Dude, they've got some of the best golf up there. And it's like cheap. It's true. God, I sound white. You just mentioned the word golf and people are like, that guy sucks. You know, it's just, like, that guy golfs, I'm out.
Sometimes I just kind of shut up and let you talk.
Yeah, it's bad.
And watch your tongue turn into a shovel as you dig your hole to the center of the earth.
Nah, I know who I am. And I golf. I'm happy about it.
You do golf. You look like somebody who golfs.
Thanks.
And this was Overarching. Overarching is produced at Fly North Theatricals in residence with the Kranzberg Arts Foundation in sunny Grand Center, St. Louis Magooby. You can find us on social media at Overarching ST Lewis. I'm Colin.
I'm Dave.
And I'm Bradley.
And I'm Doug Weaver.
And this was Overarching
with Doug Weaver.